Blog Talk Radio.
Alaroye yogode, alaroye yogode.
gore. Agayujolanio, agayujolanio, baba, cela iña, cela yo.
Agayujolanio, agayujolanio, baba.
Agayujolanio, baba se la iña se la yo.
Agayujolanio, agayujolanio, baba se la iña se la yo.
Agayujolanio, agayujolanio, baba se la iña se la yo.
Agayujolanio, agayujolanio.
Agayu el eco cuela ye.
El eco.
All the money-related issues and questions that people have. about Ifa, Lakomi, Santeria, Palo, all of the Ifa-based traditions as they manifest here in the West. Let's see. I believe only one of my co-hosts will be present with us at the beginning of the show, and that would be Oshun Yoyin. I believe Baba Ivasa Ken may still be attending to some personal business with his wife. Divine healing and wellness be upon them and their household. So far, I don't see my Nigerian co-host on my switchboard, but sometimes they have difficulty for whatever reason getting their calls across that Atlantic. And Adeyemi tends to call in a little bit later in the show. But needless to say, we invite those of you who are already with us on the phone lines to be a part of the conversation at any point by pressing the number one on your telephone keypad. And we most certainly will invite you into the conversation. I'm going to reintroduce our new co-host, Oshun Yoyin, momentarily. Let me see if I can get her line up. Divine Peace and Blessing. Erico 44. Is this Oshun Yoyin? Hello. Okay, Erico 404, specifically 404946. Your hand is raised, and I'm not quite sure who you are. I'm trying to do a roll call, but what I'm getting is feedback on your line. So I'm going to come back to you momentarily. But our show today, and we do invite all of you present, those who are already on the phone lines as well as those listening from the various outlets available, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, all the social networking links that are now live in the social networking sites. You are, please, available to call us at 347-215-8967 and present your questions and comments. We want to talk about how much does spiritual growth cost, first of all. But then more specifically, we want to talk about ATR. And I say ATR because, again, this is Ifa Wednesday, and we focus specifically on Ifa-related information on Wednesdays. However, the greater majority of you should have some understanding now that, if not all, most of the Pan-African-based religious traditions here in the West, save maybe Nuturu or Egyptian-based systems, or even Christianity and Islam, and that's a whole other category. We're going to discuss that also on the show. Because once we were brought across the Middle Passage, all of these traditions began to converge. And I said on the show previously that in adapting indigenous traditions, in adapting a more African-based reality, if you will, it is crucial that we do some serious mind purging. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you go to college, one of the first classes that you usually take in your freshman year is critical thinking. Critical thinking is important because you cannot learn without knowing how to learn, without knowing how to listen, without knowing what to do, to discard and what to absorb, where to focus your energy. And in the society that we exist in today with all the various forms of stimulation and false stimulation and illusionary stimulation and media and all the other voices that interfere with our ability to think critically, we need to purge at the conscious level before we begin to move forward honestly and authentically in any new path. how we view these paths is channeled through a cipher of our past, of our experience. Baba Ifasken is with us. I'm going to go and try his mic again. Let me see here. Baba Ni? Baba, can you hear me?
Alive here. You hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little and you sound good. Are you with me?
How about now?
Okay, I'm hearing you. Yeah, but you're fading in and out just a little bit.
Let me disconnect and try calling back.
Okay. So we want to talk about that today in great detail. This is a real issue, and as I said before, it's a sensitive issue for many people for various reasons. And this is why we need to have an open and honest discussion about finances, religion, and how these religions vary in terms of how they approach finance, particularly for those of us coming out of, let's say, the church. We have an established system of finance in the church. Now, we're not talking specifically right now about whether they're doing the right thing or the wrong thing with the money, you know, whether they have a food pantry, whether they have a clothing closet, whether they're providing, you know, that's another topic. But in terms of the financial aspects of Christianity being built into the text. If you believe in the text, if you believe in the Bible, it talks about offerings, it talks about tithes, there's a system to that. So many of us coming out of that system carry that mindset with us into now indigenous paths and traditions. And often we approach them based on the finances, because we live in a financial world in the West, good or bad, righteous or evil. This system is driven by finances. No matter how pure your heart, how honest your intentions, we can't, you know, get by with the landlord on good intentions. We can't walk into the supermarket and get fruits and vegetables because we're Ifa priests, or Babalawos, or Orisha priests, or Hoodoo priests, or anything else. So, you know, we have to have a real honest discussion on many levels about finances and then about how that intersects with these paths and these traditions. So, Baba, are you with me?
Olafia, I'm with you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound perfectly clear now.
All right, good. Using a different phone at this time. Want to send out greetings to everyone and give thanks, of course, to all of Damari, without whom nothing would exist, and to Ifa for divine wisdom and guidance, to our ancestors, without whose existence we would not exist, and to Eshu, Obatala, Ogun, Shango, and to all of the Orisha, to all of the Oromole, want to give thanks for the continued assistance that we receive every day. Want to give thanks to Maoluo and his family, and to all the families and all the Babalawos who have helped me over the years to reach the point where I am now, and to those who continue to help me, Ashe. Want to give thanks to our listening audience who give us purpose in what we do here on this show. You mentioned one of the topics today, which is the financials of Ifa and how much it costs for certain things, you know, for all of the services that we get. the question is, you know, are we getting what we paid for? Are we getting things at a fair price? And unfortunately, the really overwhelming answer to that is no. As we go to Nigeria, or in some cases, we have a few Babalawos who are actually doing initiations here in the United States, and people are paying thousands of dollars, and really paying a few thousand for an initiation is not so uncommon, and it's not so terrible when you have really the full participation of many Babalawos involved, and not only the Babalawos themselves, but their families. They get involved, Babalawos' wives and children. Everybody's participating. Everybody is putting something into what you're getting out of it. So I say, you know, even as much as 5,000 sometimes for an initiation is not bad, but we have a lot of really bad price gouging going on. And people are being charged, you know, $7,000, $10,000, $12,000 for Ifa initiations or other Orisha initiations. And it really just doesn't make sense. And it sends out a message that Ifa and Orisha tradition is for the rich, is for people who can afford it, or it's for people who are willing to risk not being able to pay their rent or their mortgage in order to pursue their spiritual path. Mm-hmm. And really, that is just terribly wrong. And that's not the message that we need to be sending out to people. It's not right. We have some Babalawos who have started out, you know, on a good path, not overcharging people, but then once they see that the money is available, once they realize, well, gee, you know, I'm offering a service that maybe some people in the U.S. are paying almost $20,000 for, but here I am in Nigeria, and I know I can get somebody to pay $10,000 or $12,000 for this service. They will go ahead and charge that amount of money just because they can, mm-hmm. because they realize somebody out there is willing to pay that kind of money.
That's just one of many reasons. I think there's also a sort of a very superficial sense that if it's coming from outside the country, it has to be better than what's here in the States. And I've seen that a lot here more recently. Just in this last 6 or 7 months, I saw a post going around Facebook on yesterday, a very positive, upbeat post. But then a sister decides to voice her complaint in a very destructive way to the whole community by sort of blanket statement that anything in Nigeria has to be better than what's being done here in the States. And I think that plays into a stereotype which is further used to seduce people out of their money.
And you're right about that.
I think Baba's being modest on the low end. I'm seeing $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, you know, being spent, and then people calling me for the simplest of questions. You know,
as high as $50,000, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, it's very common now. Someone within our circle just recently posted something from within a different path, but still, you know, to some degree, Ifa-based, upwards of $50,000. And
wow.
I was shocked. I was literally shocked.
I'm shocked that somebody would actually pay that. That's just unfathomable to me. But you're absolutely right that people are under the impression that if it came from outside of the United States, it must be better than what's in the United States. And in some cases, in some instances, that may be true. And it's not because the same things are not available to us here. It's that there is this secrecy within the tradition that, and not only in Ifa tradition, but within most African based traditional religions, as they are practiced here in the West, there's this secrecy that goes on that just isn't right. It's like there's a slave mentality there where we think we have to hide our religion. And the truth is we don't have to hide our religion. I mean, we're talking about a First Amendment right written in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, which specifies freedom of religion. And so whatever your religion is, you have the right to practice it so long as you are not, cutting in on somebody else. You know, so as long as your faith is not stopping somebody else from practicing their faith, you have a right to practice it. And nobody can take that away from you. In some cases, people may try, but it has been tried over and over again in the courts. Freedom of religion is real. And
although, let me just chime in for a second, OJ. Although I think it might be a little different from state to state in terms of sacrifice and things of that nature. I don't know if you're going to that level, but I myself. And I just want to send greetings to everyone else, everyone out there that can hear my voice. This is Oshunyoyin Ifa Wemimo. And I just want to say Oshunye Yo to everybody hearing my voice. I myself was not aware that people were paying $50,000 for an initiation. That is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that this is a very good subject that we're talking about, because there are some people that legitimately, with the goodness and kindness and love of God in their heart, want to be able to have some insight on their star and their spiritual path, and to be able to worship, you know, the way that they feel best, and that price tag is keeping them away. So now Ifa has become something for the rich and famous. And, it's very, very discouraging. And I have had many people come back to me as well, Brother Divine, saying the same type of things, like, wow, like, oh, my God, $12,000, $15,000 for an initiation, on top of the fact that you have to pay for the cost of your plane ticket, food, and everything like that. I mean, who readily has that money available?
I think there's a stereotypical belief, unfortunately, outside of the country, that all Americans, no matter what your shade, have to have some money. You're in America. You have to have access to. You have to have, you know, and we know it's not true. We know that many of us are living hand to mouth, check to check, but that stereotype has been allowed to survive on many levels in the religious world, and many are coming from that place of understanding. And as Baba also suggested too, those who do have had those resources, who do manage to go and receive and come back, then come back with a sort of elitist type energy about them, and they separate themselves and don't assist the next brother or sister or family. Don't,
right.
you know, give them that extra push so that they too can receive, you know, the services, the initiation. But before I pass the mic, I also want to bring up one third point, and that is not seeing the value of all this money being spent for initiations in terms of people's demonstrations once they get back home. You know, where are the Ewes? Where are the Bembes being held? Where are the Misas? I held a Misa here about a month ago. I think it was the first real Misa that had been held in New Orleans in almost 20 years. I was shocked.
I'm sorry. You know, Divine, I just wanted to throw this in there really quick. You know they're charging money for Misas now too, right?
That, I don't get that.
They're charging money for Misas. There used to be a point in time where houses used to have Misas, and maybe, you know, you would bring some Florida water, a few little things, everybody would contribute to cook. But now it has come to the point where if you invite someone to your Misa, oh, no, for us to come and work, $300, $500. And these are just invitees, like, hey, you know, can you come and join us? And, you know, we'll join energy and we'll do this Misa together for the upliftment of us all. And I have heard prices like that. So it has really become a big money-making deal as opposed to spiritual upliftment.
Let me break in with a question here. Okay, because I have never attended a Misa, and I understand that comes from, like, the Lukumi side of things. Mm-hmm. As I'm beginning to understand about the practice of conducting a Misa, it seems to me that's something that's along the lines of Itatogun in Ifa, where it's a community gathering where everybody gets together, and it's about the uplifting of everybody and of the community, and you're going to discuss issues of the community and do spiritual work together to solve those issues and to make things better. I just want to clarify, is that what a Misa is, more or less?
You want to give your perspective?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, and then I'll respond after you.
Oh, okay. From my many years of going to different Misas, it does have a twist with the Catholicism, with the Santeria type thing, where basically you have glasses of water, and you're working with the element of water, fire, and air. You know, people get together and they pray. So you're praying, but at the same time you're meditating, and during that time it helps you to focus, and some people are more clairvoyant than others, and you call on the different spirits and things of that nature so that, like, I may sit here and look at you and I might get a certain feeling or a certain spiritual sense and say, hey, you know what, I just saw this, and that, you know, are you in a business, and I just saw that you purchased yourself a new house or whatever. And then that thing will come into fruition depending on the clairvoyancy of that person. There are other people that might have problems that someone is able to see, and together everyone will try to work it out or find a method of working it out. It's not so much like an Itagun thing in the community here, as far as I know, but people will get together, they will eat and all of that, but discussing as far as the community, not too sure about that, unless there's a specific house, but that's basically what the Misa is all about. In Ifa they don't do that. In Ifa, I know there's more sort of like a meeting in terms of community, what they're going to do. But in certain households, they might have small Misas, and I'm sure that they can talk about whatever it is that they want to do in their households. But they basically try to work with whatever guide children or people that are participating in the Misa.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely conforms with a more Lakumi-based concept of a Misa. My experience has been with that, but has also been more centered in the second portion of our topic, which is the church. And in the spiritualist churches, in the evangelical churches, and for those who don't quite understand, when I say that, I mean the churches where they speak in tongues, the churches where they baptize in the name of Jesus and not in Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, the churches where the women don't wear pants, and they have that strong faith-healing spirit component, we can follow that line all the way back to enslavement. So there's a African-centered aspect of the Misa that was maintained here, particularly in the Deep South, and was also reinforced with the Haitian population that came in during the revolution, which brought a different flavor to the Misa that you see here, which I would describe as more like a seance. There is prayer. There is a certain level of worship. The traditional Misa that I participated in, they typically read from the Bible, not Ifa or Odu. They read from the Bible. You don't bring Orisha into the Misa. It's considered more of an Egun, an ancestral space. And that could be negative and positive. There are spirits that haven't traveled on. There are spirits that have issues that have to be addressed. And they do have the Bovida, the water set up, Oshun mentioned. But it's more of like a channeling type event where spirits of those who've gone on come through. And as she mentioned, and I think both of you mentioned, you know, you bring food, you bring offering. It is customary that there be a leader of the Misa, and they will have a fee, but it's nowhere near $200, $300, $400, and $500. And I find that to be reinforcement of the elitist spirit that now governs not just Ifa-based traditions, but many of the non-Western traditions that are in our community today.
All right, okay. Well, the definitions that both of you gave, I know that helps me a lot to understand the Misa concept, and I'm sure that went a long way toward helping people in our audience who may not be familiar with that. As I said, I've never attended a Misa myself. I tend to stick more with African tradition and operate that way. But the idea of the community coming together or all the members of a temple or ile coming together, for the benefit of everyone involved, it's not the kind of thing that you expect to step in and pay somebody $300-$400 to oversee the event or to steer the event. That's really a bit much. I have a cousin who lives in Brooklyn, Monifa Edwards, and she conducts something similar, and she does it, I think, about once a month. I know she at least publishes a newsletter once a month, but she has an event, and, they offer food and refreshments, and she doesn't really ask anybody to bring anything, but some people do bring stuff. And her way of being compensated for it is just asking for open donations. And, she may suggest a donation of $2 or $5. And, people will pay what they can. Some people, may be broke that month and just can't pay anything. But they're not barred from coming in. They can still come in, sit down, participate fully, just like anybody else. And it's a sense of community, service to the community, and really joint participation in something, strength in numbers, the gathering of people for a common cause. I mean, the common cause there is spiritual upliftment, and the idea of getting ripped off just for spiritual upliftment is just ridiculous. And I know we all here feel that way because, you know, that's why we're discussing this. And
but
we
But the problem is that's the American way. Tell me a time.
The American way is one thing, but then we get involved with people from Nigeria and we're still subjected to the same things, and in some cases even worse.
But that's why we go over to
Nigeria, and it's like, oh, you're American, so we're going to charge you a whole bunch of money. If you are an American and you're in contact with Baba.
But are we going to look for solutions? And if we're going to begin to address the solutions,
a reading, you're getting Ebba done, you know, the follow-up spiritual work and everything. And you're charged, you know, $800, $1,000, $2,000 for your Ebba.
What does Adeniyi think about this? That's my question. Is he on the line?
No, he's not on the line.
I think
it's important that we look at solutions. And in order for us to address
solutions,
not allowing anyone else to speak.
Right.
If we're going to address solutions, so we have to look at the problem.
Right.
Part of the problem is that
the solution is that people need to stop paying the price. That's the solution. The solution is that people, I'm sorry, Divine, I think the solution is that people, well, awareness, number one. You know what? Oh, geez, I got to take this call for a minute, so I'll be right back. Okay?
But that's the very point that you all are not allowing me to make, and that is the American way. So you have people that are born in this system, raised in this system, educated in this system, and as I said at the beginning of the show, they bring that mindset to these paths and these traditions. Even before we get to Cuba, even before we get to Nigeria, even before we get to Puerto Rico, we are feeding the very system that we often complain about. I can't tell you how many calls, how many emails I get every week about this topic. No matter how many times we talk about it, and the disposition of the caller, it's always, Divine Prince, look what they did to me. This happened to me. I got charged. That happened. And we never look at how do we go into the situation.
But as Sunyonian was bringing up, just as she had to go off and take another call, was that the one major solution or one major point in solving this problem is that we can't continue to support this system of ripoff. You know, yes, the American way, you know, you free enterprise is basically making as much money as you can off of whoever you can. And as long as there's somebody willing to pay it, there's somebody willing to charge it.
We have to begin healing at the mind level, at the conscious level. Many people don't even know how they're approaching these situations. You know, what happens is you begin to feel like, you know, you're being targeted, and you become the victim, and you move into a place where you don't look at your own behavior. You don't look at why is it that every weekend I end up with a house full of drunks. Why is it every relationship I get into always ends up the same? And you and I both know that when the client comes, when the godchild comes, it's always the other person's fault. Always. And my belief is the reasoning for that is because we don't take the time to examine the very system. You can't break it if you don't know what it is. If you don't know where you're being poisoned, then you're going to keep drinking out of that same cup. So we have to look at the American way in order to reverse that programming. But as long as we're not willing to talk about that, to address that in detail, then we're just always going to keep coming back to dancing around the same issues. And let me,
right, well, let me ask you this. Aside from just refusing to continue to feed into that system, aside from refusing to pay the high cost, is there something specific that you see as a solution?
Absolutely. And I'm going to reiterate what I just said. Most people don't have a clue about the system. We talk
right.
about the system. We propagandize about the system. Most people don't even understand it. Can't spell it, can't write it, can't explain it to the next person. So therefore, you don't know who the enemy is. You don't know how to protect yourself from the enemy. You don't realize that the enemy is within you. And let me give you a quick example. The client that comes to me and the first question out of their mouth is payment, I usually don't work with them. I usually don't work with them. It means turning down some requests. It means saying, look, beloved, your issue is not gin, your issue ain't a spell. Your issue is your behavior. We're not doing that. We're not stressing mental health over witchcraft. We're not teaching diet over BS. And so you can't just say, well, you know, we've got to work against these practitioners who are fraudulently beating all these people out of their money while not addressing the very desire for that is bred in the American audience. They want to pay a whole bunch of money for something that's going to take 24 hours to fix and not have to do anything else beyond that. Because that is the fast food mindset. So we have to address the American way. We're in America.
Okay, let me say something on that. All right, you brought out something that's very strong, and I think I realize now really how strong it is. And it's a matter of how we deal with our clients and godchildren and what we're teaching them. You know, are we teaching them that mm-hmm. no matter what the problem is, you throw money at it and you fix it?
Exactly.
And that's not the way you fix a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if, as you say, the problem is within yourself. You know, why is it always somebody else's fault? Why is it always some outside source that causes your problems, and you think you can throw money at it, have spiritual work done, and fix it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, I wasn't thinking that way because I don't teach that way. I don't teach people that, okay, come to me, I'm going to fix all your problems for $500 or $1,000 or whatever it is. As a matter of fact, I had one client contact me through postal mail. This is a person who was incarcerated. And basically he wanted me to manipulate the courts in his favor so that he could be exonerated of all the charges that are against him and that he can get off. And I wrote him back and I told him, you know, you didn't come to me asking for the truth to be revealed so that you can be proven innocent. You didn't come to me asking for guidance as to how you should conduct yourself in this. You came to me saying, there's a problem. I want out of this. And tell me how much it's going to cost to get it done. And I'll pull together resources and pay you. And, you know, I told him there's no way. I don't do that sort of thing.
Okay, now, wait, Baba, now let's follow the storyline. So
right.
What do you think he did next? He went to the next person. He went to the next practitioner.
No, actually, this person did not. This person actually wrote me back and thanked me for setting him straight.
Okay, well, then that's a blessing, because that's rare.
This person wrote me back and thanked me for setting him straight, and we still have an ongoing dialogue, and I am teaching him through mail correspondence.
But you know that's not the norm. We know that's not the norm because most requests start with, I've already been to 100 people. I've already done a million evos. I've already spent thousands of dollars. So the norm, the American way, is the shortcut. And it's to find the next person. So we've got to find a way to teach the truth about the traditions, but on a much bigger scale than one or two people.
Right.
You know,
well, the thing is, are we willing to turn down the money to set people straight? I know you are. I know I am. I'm absolutely sure Ocean Union is. But how many of us are out there who are willing to turn down the money to set people straight? Sadly, most people will take the money and do whatever the client asks just for the sake of the dollar.
And those who want the shortcut will move on to the next practitioner. I've hung up on people on King behind this very topic at the threat of a bad rating. You know, so I hear what you're saying. You know, you're going to have those who are truly seeking wisdom, and they're going to follow wisdom. And sometimes when you're incarcerated, it's easier to, you know, follow wisdom. But many of us that are out here in the so-called free world, in this free market American system, don't have that understanding, don't want that understanding, don't see that understanding reflected anywhere else, whether it's in the Elay, whether it's in the church, whether it's in the mosque, and getting that message across at a much larger scale is going to be a monumental task for us to do, and particularly for us to do singularly. You know,
right.
You over there, me, and me here. Ea, did you have a comment?
I was just chiming back in. No comment at the moment. I'm trying to catch back up. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay. I want to get back a little bit to what I was talking about regarding the prices that we are charged by Nigerians. And this really isn't the same thing as just throwing money at a problem and wanting a quick fix. Right, we're talking about in the case with many of the Nigerians who are doing the spiritual work for people here in the Americas, we're strictly talking about opportunistic price gouging, whereas no, somebody's not looking for a quick fix, but they just want to go through the rites of the tradition, and they want to learn in the traditional manner.
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to put in the time that it takes to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But while they're willing to put in the time, some of these Babalawos in Africa are really willing to risk even losing a client just for charging them as much as they can because they think Americans have money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something that has to change. And the only way we can change that is simply by refusing to pay the money. Let's face it, most of these Babalawos in Nigeria who are initiating people from the Americas, Most of them have never stepped foot outside of Nigeria.
You know what? I do have a comment.
And they are depending on Babalawos and Iyani Fas and Olorishas here in the U.S. to bring clients to them. And, you know, it's like no matter what they charge, the prices keep going up and up and up. We keep bringing people to them, and we keep telling people, okay, well, this is how much it's going to cost. I know years ago this was like $5,000 or $4,000, but now it's, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000. And we need to put our foot down and say, hey, we can't, we're not going to continue
Go ahead, Ia.
Okay. Actually, what I was going to say, and you have a point, OJ, you know what I think has happened? And my comment may not be appreciated, but, I have to speak truth. There are a few that have gotten out of Nigeria and have done very well, okay, by traveling to so many different places and have come back and built mansions, okay? More than one house, several mansions, several businesses, X, Y, and Z. And so from their success, okay, because normally speaking back in the day, with the Babalawo, you go, you get a divination, and they weren't considered to be very wealthy. You would go to the back bush and you would go and get your work done, and whatever you can put to the table, you would put to the table. But now that the few that have gotten a chance to get out and have come back, and have built these fabulous houses, why not would all the other ones want to emulate them? You know what I'm saying? So-and-so went out of the country and they came back and they're doing Ifa, and, oh, my God, now they have, like, four mansions and, this sounds like a good idea for me too. So, if they got it from America or Australia or London or wherever it is, of course I'm gonna charge these high prices because they're living good too. I want to live the same way. It's like food for Ifa. Let's put it that way. Let's charge all this money. And these people are going to be food for Ifa. We're going to feed our kids. I mean, the only other thing that I wanted to say, and trying not to go off course, is that being here in the States, that being that we have these different programs and safety nets and everything like that, in Nigeria they don't have that, okay? They don't have welfare. They don't have the health insurance as far as I understand. So if they don't have a regular job, that money that they're getting, I guess, has to either last a long time or they have to have somebody to help to continue to keep the pot full. So that may be another reason for exploitation for some of them. But like you said, we have to stop paying these crazy prices. And then again, don't get me wrong, some might be, well, if you can't pay this price, then go on to the next. So, I would really like for them to hear if any of them are on the line or somehow or another the message can get across that there needs to be a fair price. You can't eat everything at one time. You can get little from more than enough people, and it's onward and endless as opposed to I need to eat everything right now.
Right.
So that's my comment.
I agree. I agree 100%. Prince Ty, you have something to add on that?
I also think it's important that we be educated about business, and particularly here in the States, and for Black African Americans. We have a hard time conceptualizing religion and business in the same space. I'm at the threat of losing power every other month, water every other month, not being able to make my rent, every 2 or 3 months, because people don't value what we do here in the same way as being in a tropical setting. I think we're also paying for, the romance of these environments. Now, when you're talking about certain materials, you know, that I understand. You know, certain plants only grow in certain places. You know, certain concoctions can be mixed fresh only in certain locations, you know, because of the availability. You know, I get that. But beyond that, I think there has to be some outward reach from West Africa, not just in Ifa, but in Akan and many of the other traditions for the benefit of the whole. As I just suggested, you know, a little bit from everyone fairly can go a long way in
support
of
the whole community. But as long as we're forced to have to compete just on survival, you know, I don't have a degree. I don't have a job. By the government standards, I'm disabled, and most people are not going to hire me to work a job. And spirituality became my job. Some people have a hard time saying that out of their mouth in the same sentence. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not righteous. I don't think it's immoral in any way. And I think it's in divine order. But things have to be fair, and things have to be in balance. I give away a lot in terms of time and energy. You know, I have at least 10 people on Facebook that feel it's okay for them to call me at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I have people calling me from Nigeria, from Ghana, you know, from Kenya. So there has to be some fair sense of value placed on the system that is applied equally throughout the diaspora.
You know, you're absolutely right, because I myself, I mean, I do a lot of spiritual work for people as well, and I find that kindness goes a long way, and I mean authentic kindness, not be kind to me so you can dig out my bank account, you know what I mean? But authentic kindness really does go a long way. I tell people as well that, look, my phone, I have a phone so you can call it, okay? If you need to call me 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and you have a problem and you have no other listening ear, please feel free to do so. I have gotten gifts from out of nowhere that I've not expected that, hey, you know what, Oshoyoyi, you have been so kind, and I just wanted to give you this. We never know where our blessings come from. So I really think we need to get back to the Godhead basics of, you know, we are here to help each other. God is not going to come down from heaven to tell you to go and help somebody. You know what I mean? You're going to be a somewhat of an intermediary between God and the next man in terms of helping them, if I've said that correctly. So, I mean, I agree. I think the only thing we can do at this point is to get the message out. If we people need to know, you don't have to pay $50,000 to get your initiation, okay? Because $50,000 should be able to do what for a whole village? Well, I could use $50,000. I could do $50,000. Matter of fact, if you want to give me $50,000, I'd give you initiation right now. It's too much. It's too much. But all jokes aside, you know, I do hope that the message gets out, and we have to realize that, you know, Ifa will open the way for us. When it's time for you two to get initiated, Ifa will open the way. You know that, OJ Lola, right?
Oh, yes, I most certainly do. I most certainly do. When it was time for me to be initiated, the money was coming from
the sky
for me to go ahead and get initiated. You know, fortunately, the amount of money I paid is much less than what people are paying today. But, you know, even taking into account the inflation over the years, it's just ridiculous now what people are paying for these services. And, you know, we need to make connections with traditionalists who are not giving in to the greed, and
yes.
we need to promote those. And, you know, if there are some who have given in to the greed, but we know that you know, this is somebody who started out with good character, maybe we can talk to them and say, hey, you know, don't you think you're being a bit outrageous here? I mean, I know you're good at what you do, but don't you think it would be better if you could spread the tradition more to more people by charging a lower price and,
right.
and bringing in more people? You know, don't you think you'd be better off in the long run? Don't you think the promotion of the tradition would be better off in the long run?
It's
going to require doing something that's very unpopular right now, and that is moving away from ritual, ebo, service-based ifa to religion. Nobody's teaching religion. No one's teaching philosophy. No one is teaching the understanding that goes with these paths. So people are looking at them from a you know, Walgreens, you know, the pharmaceutical counter type of perspective. I got a problem. How much do I pay? How many baths I got to take? You know, and we're not addressing it from internally. We're not
right.
going in.
That's
go
like
ahead,
Motion Union when I spoke with your husband on the phone recently. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things that he was pointing out, and he said, you know, even in Nigeria, a lot of these young Babalawos coming up now, they memorize the Ifa verses. They know how to chant Ifa, and then they know how to do Ebo. They know the technicalities of it. But when it comes to the real ideals of the faith, when it comes to the history of the religion, when it comes to truly understanding the various Orisha and their roles in life and in the world, they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Prince Tai is so right. We've got to really focus on what the religion is, really focus on the background, the morals of it, the roles. There's a whole lot that's missing when we're just looking for, unfortunately, again, the quick fix. We got a problem, we want to go to a priest or priestess, and we want that problem fixed. And we're not concerned so much about you know, our whole lifestyle and adhering to the basic laws and principles of the religion. And yeah, you know, religion these days has a bad sound to it today because people are so much against religion, and you definitely hear so many people saying that they don't participate in any organized religion. They're against organized religion.
But you know what's another thing too, and I mean, you know, spending a little bit of time in Nigeria myself, there are even Nigerians in general that are not involved in the religion or were involved in the religion at some point in time that converted to Christianity, either Celestial Church or Cherubim and Seraphim Church, which has some little similarities to the Santeria thing, by the way, because they use candles, water, and different things like that. And although, let them tell you they don't do it, some of them use medicine too, okay? But the thing about it is that you will even hear some of the people in those churches say, we don't deal with the Babalawos because they will take your money. You know, different things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of negative now that's coming along with the whole Ifa thing. And like Divine said, I would really love to hear more about what – oh, shit, they call, I'm sorry. You know what, you guys?
Okay.
Sorry about that. I got to go, guys. Okay?
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
I did not expect to hear that come out of her mouth.
No, but, yeah, that broke it up for us a little bit.
But it's not just Ifa. There is a global turn against religion right now. It's in favor to hate religion, to be anti-religion right now. And I think that will pass. But in the interim, in order for any of these traditional African-based paths to survive, the real meaning has to be passed on. The real messages, the real philosophy, the real understanding, if you will.
All right, well, I've had clients come to me, and, you know, they want a problem fixed, and I will do the divination for them, and it comes out, you know, that, okay, a major part of your problem is you. You have to fix you. You know, you're not living right, or maybe you think you're living right, but you're doing a lot of things that are wrong. You're doing a lot of things that are immoral, and they don't see this. And a lot of times, one of the things that will come out is, specifically now, I've seen it come out for at least a few clients, it comes out specifically that they need to adhere to the 16 laws of Ifa. And they're like, I've been dealing in Ifa and Orisha for a while. I never heard of these 16 laws. What are they?
That's just
like,
shocking.
Hey, these are basics. I mean, it's like a Christian not knowing the first clue about what the Ten Commandments are.
Right. That's just shocking. Shocking.
Yeah. And, you know, so I have the 16 laws paraphrased and written up for easy understanding, so that when this comes up, I just copy this and send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so often, because people are not about the religion. They're not about understanding, common sense laws of nature, the whole idea of karma and all of that. They're like oblivious to this. Maybe nobody ever taught them. Maybe it's by choice they choose not to remember this, choose not to know it. But that's where religion comes in, rather than just going to get some spiritual work done.
Right.
And you know, that's a major problem. People, and you know, as you said repeatedly, I've said repeatedly, people want to throw money at a problem, and you know, say, okay, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is not like going to the mechanic with your car and, you know, hey, the engine's not running right, whatever it costs, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not like that. This is all of life. You know, life is religion. Religion is life. It's the way you live. It's your values. Your principles, your morals, and people want to separate that from the rest of life, and it just doesn't work that way. And when you go to the mechanic to get your car fixed, you know, there's no morals that your car has to operate by in order to get fixed properly. I mean, it's a machine. You turn it on, it either works right or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about human life, it's not a machine.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there are values, there are principles, there are morals. And we've got to teach people these morals, because obviously they don't know. Because, like I said, I have been totally shocked by how many people have come to me and Ifa says, you know, well, these people aren't living right. There's, you know, basic values that they're not paying attention to, and they need to follow the 16 laws of Ifa. You know, everybody needs to follow the 16 laws of Ifa. It's like the Ten Commandments. It's like, you know, in any religion, there are a set of basic rules that you have to follow to live a good life. And really, they don't vary that much from one religion to the other. I mean, somebody may have 20 laws, somebody may have 100 laws, somebody may have 10, and the Fa's got 16. But when you look at it and look at what they're talking about, it doesn't vary that much. It's about living a good life.
But when you don't have the focused path of religion, even that becomes complicated for people of this generation, this day and time, not generation, but this day and time to grab. Because we live in the day of the smorgasbord. You know, I can take a little bit from the Dead Sea Scrolls and a little bit from the Egyptian Book of the Dead and a little bit from the Bible and a little bit from Esau and do my own thing with it. You know, which is another way that this sort of global destruction of religion is being carried out. If there is any conspiracy, that's it. All cultures, as Baba just said, all indigenous cultures have religion.
Right.
It's as natural as breathing and gathering food, having a sense of understanding and belief about the world that you operate and exist within. But we've moved into that, you know, that ritual service-based, you know, lifestyle. You know, my love life got to be fixed. My finances got to be fixed. My job got to be hoodooed, you know, and we don't want to do the homework. And I test my godchildren on homework. And I'm sure you do as well, but cause people will respond to these emails in a matter of minutes. And any of you who've ever seen any of my most simple communications know I'm long-winded. It takes longer than 5 minutes to read some of my communications. You know, so when they respond back, especially in that keen and that live person system. Not even a minute after you've gotten off the phone with them, you know they're not ready to do the work. And here in the West, well, we're forced to pay bills every day, eat every day. You know, only the strongest of integrity can operate wholly within that system without taking advantage. And there are too many of us who want to be taken advantage of simply by our behavior. As I was trying to stress with you earlier on the show, Bob, many of these people are going to move on to the next person who is going to convince them that they can fulfill that fantasy. You know, I got an email the other day from Africa, I won't say where, who wants some type of fail to materialize $10 million physically into this person's house.
Mm.
And I know it's not a joke. I know it sounds crazy to us, but I know the person really believes this to be actual and has been convinced of it, so much so that they're determined to find someone to fulfill this request for any amount of money. So who do you blame? You can't blame me for that belief system and for allowing that belief system to continue to exist. You know, we've
right.
talked about this too many times. And that's why, for me, I keep coming back to mental health. If we can come together as a community around something, I say it should be mental health.
Well, your mind and your spirit really are one. And you know, if your mind ain't right, your spirit ain't gonna be right. Your spirit ain't right, your mind ain't gonna be right. The two are inseparable. So if you talk about mental health, you're right on target. And you know, because some of the things that people ask us for, they ask us to do for them. if they took the time to look at the whole big picture, you know, they'd realize, gee, I must be out of my mind to expect this. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of mental health there for real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people don't realize it. And they're walking around blind. And you know, it also goes back to religion, as we both said, where, you know, people don't have the set of rules, a set of morals, the understanding of life, and you know, no clues to the meaning of life. They just know that they want their life to be a certain way, and it's not that way, and they want to pay some money and get it fixed. Mm-hmm. That's to me, to think that way, that's crazy. That's a lack of mental health. They're not in touch with reality. Reality is that, you know, things don't happen like magic.
Mm-hmm.
That's not reality. And you know, when you're out of touch and out of touch with reality, right? There is a medical term for that. It's called schizophrenia. And really, there are a whole lot of people living in a state of schizophrenia because they are just out of touch with reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think the downside of the internet is that it makes it far more convenient for people with some of these disorders to sort of group together and reinforce that thinking and that mindset. We see it a lot with the conspiracy theorist type, you know, environment, where some of these people we know have some other issues that are not being addressed. And it's real easy to take, you know, a drop of truth and mix it with some, you know, some water and sort of dilute it down and make it more palatable for larger numbers of people to ingest. And the internet has provided a great, however negative, environment for that to take place.
Right. That brings to mind something else that I've noticed over the years. There are a lot of support groups and awareness groups over the internet and you know, through other conventional means, support groups and awareness groups for people who have certain types of illnesses and disorders. And yeah, I understand that in this world we do need to raise awareness about certain illnesses and disorders so that we're able to address them. So we recognize the problem, we're able to act on it, we're able to do something about it. But at the same time, there are a lot of these support groups and awareness groups that seem to operate in a manner where it's a large group of people just saying, oh, look at me, I have the same illness, I'm special, mm-hmm. You need to pay attention to me, you need to be aware of me, and it's just a way to complain and get attention for whatever's ailing you, rather than actually fixing fixing the problem or looking for a way to fix the problem. It's more like have pity on me because this is what I'm suffering with, and I've seen a lot of that going around on the internet. And, you know, that's not supporting the person. That's not helping them to deal with the disorder or illness or whatever it is that they have. And it's really not doing anything to help the rest of the world understand.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is people are, you know, just kind of lost in this depression because of their illness, and the support group or awareness group is just facilitating their depression, their sorrow that they constantly live in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a it's a mental state of depression. And it's not healthy. And then people who have these illnesses and disorders, they seek out Baba Laos expecting some kind of special attention because of their disorder that they've been taught now that everybody needs to be aware of this and you need to treat me special because I've got this illness. Well, okay, if you and 5 million other people have the same illness, what's different about you right now? Right? We need to address your life. As a practitioner of IFA, I need to address that person's life, not 5 million other people's lives. I need to find out what's going on with you. And if it turns out that a part of your problem is that you choose to wallow in misery because your support group says you need to put it out there about how miserable you are with this condition, okay, you need to change that. You need to change that. No, I'm not saying that, you know, oh, you've got a sickness, so go ahead and suffer. I'm not saying I don't care about your sickness either. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need to look at your life so that you can be happy, so that you can live more comfortably. And if you're spending all your time whining and complaining about your illness, you're never going to be happy.
You don't have time to address the solution.
Right.
And that within itself becomes a form of addiction, just the need to talk about the issue, repeat the issue, recant the issue, get different people's opinion about the issue as opposed to focusing in on the resolution.
Right.
The result.
Right.
Moving forward. It's been said that's one of the downfalls of the 12-step program and AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and Narcotics Anonymous, you know, where you have too many people operating in a negative pattern without enough reinforcement of the solutions, of the choices that could be made to move your life in a different direction. And it reinforces the relapse process for many people. And at some point, you gotta get up. At some point, you have to get up if you truly want relief from whatever that thing is. And again, I'm really concerned about the overemphasis on self and result-oriented processes in a society that, you know, I kind of call it the New Age society, where everything is really about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my happiness, my peace, my love. It's not what you think about me, it's what I think about me. And, you know, all those feel-good qualities that we see going around, you know, Facebook all day long, you know,
right,
which on one hand have some level of truth to them, but also reinforce this sort of narcissistic, it's all about me and my stuff, me and my love life, you know, me and my career. We don't have that real village mentality anymore. We don't have a real community mentality anymore. And I think it's good for us to focus on other people sometimes for our own healing, you know, do for someone else. You know, you're not employed, so volunteer somewhere where, on the one hand, there may be a possibility for unemployment, but you're also still actively doing something beneficial in your community.
Right.
And your hormones and the chemicals in your body and the endorphins will respond exactly the same way as if you were getting a paycheck. But now,
right,
you know, and it's almost widely accepted, as you just said, to sort of wallow and then find other people who reinforce the wallowing and want to talk about what we're wallowing in.
you know, and how we got there, and, you know, and no one wants to do the homework.
Right.
That is moving forward. Bob, are we going to take just a quick break, and then we'll come back with more of EFI Wednesdays here on Blog Talk Radio.
Okie doke. Certainly do, as always, appreciate each and everyone for being present for the Power Lunch, Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes, and, of course, for EFI Wednesday. All is truly and indeed a blessing. I think, too, Baba, it's important that we think about and address popularity as an issue in terms of sort of feeding into the system of overly focused in on finances and survival, if you will. I can easily see how, in not any particular town or village in West Africa in particular, but I can see how many of these communities throughout the world are often forced to build an economy
around tourism. And tourism takes a different face specific to where it's found. So here in New Orleans, naturally, a lot of tourism is going to have a jazz theme. It's going to have a voodoo theme. It's going to have a Mardi Gras theme. No matter how true or authentic to the real practice, those things may or may not be. And the tourist, the traveler, having the necessary information and education to understand where they're going, what type of experience it is that they're looking for, I think also feeds into this machinery, if you will. So what the point I'm trying to address, I think, is perhaps some of the places where we're going in West Africa for these initiations have so focused in on initiation tourism as a means of survival that they may not be looking, as Iya said, into the future in terms of building that foundation of religion and culture and practice and tradition in the way that other religious paths do, Jehovah's Witnesses do, the way churches do, the way Muslims do, the way Mormons do. We see these groups every day in New Orleans, on the street, on bikes, knocking at your door, making sure that their message is relevant, making sure that their presence is felt and perceived within the community, whether people are actively participating within their, you know, religion or not. And I think to some degree we have got to focus in on that in ATR, and particularly in EFA here in the States. And that requires Babalawos, Ianifas, those who have the skill, those who have the education, those who have the training, developing well-organized communities and ELAs. And that is just not happening. I know here in New Orleans, which, you know, is a really a small town with a big personality, but this is a small town. It would be very difficult to operate in any of these traditions here and not be widely known. I've said before on the show, you go to the Bembe, and then the next day you go to the voodoo tambour, and you're going to find some of the same people. You certainly going to find the same drummer and the same bellsman and the same singers based on their skill and their talent. And in a tourist-based economy, all of that takes on a performance level. So, you know, we're drumming and we're singing Orisha and dancing. We just had the Jazz and Heritage Fest just last weekend, for the last 2 weeks, actually. And you see all of that being performed on stage for a dollar. And those of us who are in the community know the difference between sacred ceremony and performance. But I don't think that wisdom, that knowledge, that information is trickling out to mainstream society, to our greater community, because of all the secrecy and the mystery around these traditions and not wanting to go into detail about things. Even if it's not wanting to get into a confrontation. I know often I will post things on my Facebook and not get into detail because I don't have time for the confrontation. I don't have time to hear how it's done in Cuba, how it's done in Florida, how it's done in New Jersey, as opposed to all of us supporting the foundation of these traditions, which will benefit in keeping all of us alive and moving ahead and towards the mark, if you will.
Go
ahead, Baba.
One thing that comes to mind in some of the things that you mentioned, about us not being able to reach our communities the way the Christian churches do, and you know, seeing the things that the Christian churches do, the way they gather, that we're not doing in African traditional religions. A big part of that is the failure to teach the religion. Like I said, there's a secrecy, but then there's also the mode in which a lot of African traditional religion is operating here in the States. And a lot of it is, again, the idea of throwing money at a problem and fixing it without teaching the religion. You can't really have a great following. You can't really have a congregation if you're not really teaching them. If all you are is a problem solver, you're a method of crisis intervention, there's really not a whole lot to teach outside of the messages that come through in, for example, with Ifa, the Odu Ifa that is revealed for a person when they come to you with a specific problem. You do divination for this person, Odu Ifa comes out, you then look at that Odu Ifa and examine the verses that would pertain to the person's problem. If that's all you're doing, then you're not doing a whole lot of teaching. You can't really gain a following that way. You can't really bring people into a house of worship, to a temple, or even to gather in your home if you're not really teaching them. And the thing is, we have to teach. We have to look at the religion. We have to look at the morals, the rules, the guides of the religion, so that we are helping people consistently to live better. We're helping people to stand on their own two feet. I mean, yeah, the Babalawo is still going to be there to intervene in when crises happen. They're going to be there to help people solve specific problems. But at the same time, if the Babalawo is going to be a pillar in his community, if he is going to be a real spiritual leader in his community, he has to teach. And he's got to do more than just rely on verses of Ifa that come out in addressing a person's crisis. He's got to be able to teach the morals of Ifa. He's got to be able to teach the principles behind it. He's got to be able to teach about the various Orisha and their roles and what they do in our lives and how we need to conduct our lives. We can't, you know, do anything as far as building community and establishing houses of worship and gathering congregations if we're doing nothing but crisis intervention. And that's the big problem. We just want to fix problems, and we don't want to address life as a whole. And, you know, when we change that focus, we'll be able to change a lot of things. We'll be able to bring people together.
And how do we do that and ensure that our Babalawos and our teachers are not on welfare and can survive and take care of their families?
That is a difficult thing because, as you have brought up several times, the traditionalists, the practitioners of African tradition don't have the proper support and respect of the people that they're serving. And I believe believe a lot of that will change. It's not going to be an overnight process. It's going to take some time. It may take a lot of time. But that can change really by us as practitioners changing the way we operate. If we are willing to only operate in crisis intervention mode, then that's all they're going to look at us as. You know, we just go to them when we got a big problem we need solved. There's no need to go to your priest, your babalawo for, you know, just learning about life and understanding the meaning and purpose of life and understanding how to stand on your own two feet, understanding how to strengthen your personal relationship with God and with the Orisha. You know, we've got to change that mode. We've got to really start teaching. And the way to go about it, just make the change. As practitioners, we have to just make that change. We have to start doing these things. You know, it's like, you know, what they say about peace. There's no way to peace. Peace is the way. It's either you're going to put down the gun and live peacefully, or you're not, one or the other. And when it comes to African traditional religion, we either have to set the crisis mode aside or continue to live in just that mode. You know, which is it we're going to do? Me?
Yeah, that
I'm teaching.
That sounds easier said than done.
It is easier said than done because people get used to living in a certain way. But we've got to do it.
People have grown up on Alka-Seltzer commercials and Pepto-Bismol commercials. We live in a society where people do not prepare for the future. They only focus on the remedy of the moment. So how do we teach that at a larger scale and survive and not be homeless, you know, in a day and time where most people don't want that? They don't want to have to sit down and learn something, study something, memorize something, rehearse something. Just fix our problem and keep it moving. How do we reinforce that against the tide of all the other competitors that we have in terms of competing for our attention and our energy in this culture? And I'll let you have the final say because we have about 90 seconds left.
I don't want to be overly redundant, but it's still the message is the same. We just have to make the change, and whatever pains it takes to do that, we've got to do. Otherwise, we end up still doing the same thing over and over again and still lacking in the same things over and over again. And, you know, we're lacking in the community. And in the community, I mean the community at large. I don't mean just the Ifa community. I mean, because if we go out in the streets, you're going to come across several different kinds of Christian churches. And these churches are known throughout the community. They're not just known among Christians. You can find a Jew on the street, and he will know where, you know, some of the larger Christian churches are in the area. And, you know, you can find a Catholic priest, and he will know where, you know, a local mosque is. He will know where a Jewish synagogue is. All right, that's because these are establishments that are teaching people. These are establishments that people have an ongoing relationship with. And these are where people go to understand life and where they go to learn about living and how to live better and how to pray, how to be spiritually supportive of themselves and their own families. And you know, without us in African traditional religion teaching these same things, we will never gain popularity in the community because people are just going to us for the quick fix. If we want popularity in the community, we have to address all aspects of life. We can't just address problems, because life isn't only about problems. Life is about succeeding. Life is about moving forward in a positive direction. It's not about you know, some incantation, some spell to bring you $1 million from the lottery. That's not real. That something may happen once in a while, but that's not the reality for most people. And we need to address the lives of most people. With that said, I'm going to close, and I'm going to wish and pray for everyone's benefit, that we all come to realization that we need in life, that we need to address our whole life and not just address the problems, that we need to be supportive of one another, and we need to learn from one another. And when we learn from one another, we need to teach others who don't know. With that, everyone be cool, be blessed, and be well. And we will see you next week on Ifa Wednesdays here on Power Lunch with Divine Prince Ty Emeka, myself, Ojolola Ifa Shakin, and Ya Oshinyoyin Ifa Wemimo. And hopefully next time we will also have our guests from Nigeria. Ashe.
Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our host, the Omus Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life. Which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang, we beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us. Inside the beat of us, our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated, retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate. A world heralded by the beat. Be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat, heart beat, heart be at this place be heart beat, beat, we beating place in new world space. Beating, being in place in new world, preserving our ancient pace. Our dance is the God walk, our music the God talk. First thing we do, let's get together, circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end, connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal. Be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance, be Banza music, and sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood flow, the feel, the spirit grow, energy must retain and pass on the essential usness that others want to dissipate with out Hello. Of us.
Whoa.
But no matter, no matter how much of us they prohibit,
Wait.
No matter how much of us they prohibit, deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us inside and needs only the beat to set us free. The beat to free us. It is morning. A sun day. A feel. A feel. Without shade, but dark. Dark with the people black of us in various shades. Eclipsing the sun with our elegance. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. Beat Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Beat. Be. beat be. Congo Square. B. Congo Square. B. 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 Remember.